nice to say that, but it sounds well, but what does it mean? The core assumption of a free progress education paradigm is that everyone is a soul in progress. That's where the name progress comes from. A soul, an inner being, a psychic being, call it whatever you want, but someone, something in us that has this need to progress. It is a being in evolution. If you want to put it on a more spiritual line, I would speak about a divine spark, a seed that has the potential, however, to grow and to develop. This evolution and development of that element, of that divine element in us, and that is already inside of every one of us, not only children, but also of grown-ups, is, however, something highly individual and is personalized. It's something that cannot be flattened out and say it's equal, everyone is equal. It is something to such a degree that it is futile, I think, to believe that there exists a sort of universal formula which could sum up and culture, which is supposed to be good for all, and that should be crammed into a school or university curriculum. I think these individual interests, skills, strengths of every one of us are an expression of the soul's need for self-expression, in fact. And this is the need to evolve through experience. But these inner needs are so diverse and even divergent between people. And also the time and the rhythm by which each child and also adults learn something is extremely different. But not because someone is better or the other is inferior, but because our inner being has a wisdom, I think, of its own and knows much better than us what is good or bad for us, and if this or that thing that has to be learned is good or bad for us and has to be accomplished quickly or slowly eventually. So I like to speak in terms of a sort of soul growth, so to speak. That's the reason why preconceived curricula with deadlines, precise roadmaps, which are supposed to be good for all, inside a structure that treats everyone as if we are all the same, behind a mask, a false mask of democracy, I think, is something wrong. An education that puts us into a strictly artificial age-structured classroom environment, where the system tells you what to do, when to do, and how to do it, this is deeply, I think, unnatural, an unhealthy way of learning. It refuses to recognize our inner being, the potential the potential of our individual source. And what does it do? It sacrifices on the altar of a collective machinery, as Rio Bindo would call it. No? By doing so, I think we hamper and suppress the inner evolution of our something in us to conform the inner side to the outer world. Whereas, according to a free progress education view, instead we are, so to speak, these embodied souls who have an intrinsic and natural tendency and necessity to evolve by a self-expression in the manifestation. Other Aubendonian expression, sorry. But in this view here, each of one of us proceeds along one's own highly personalized way according to what we really are inside, but from the inside out and not vice versa as it is done nowadays in the schools. That's also why I say always remember the fact that the word education comes from the Latin word educere, no? Which means to pull out, to draw out, not to put in. It is about the soul that has to step forward, not about the person who has to be pressed into a system backwards. And that's why I speak so of this soul-centered and soul-growth education, which allows for self-expression and self-unfoldment. And only that, I think, can really work. If that educational paradigm is flexible enough, having this plasticity to adapt to each individual's needs, then I think it can succeed in creating a different humanity, even, which is able of more creativity, original and critical thinking. And I believe also as a more or less direct or indirect effect also of more empathy, compassion, tolerance. Whereas an education focusing on work and money is, I think, as I read it a bit on the forum, it came up as a discussion, an education that is fixed on the work and money is exactly the contrary of that. It starves the soul and tries to impose the outside conditions to an inside world that should conform. But yeah, it might conform, but I think we are going towards a generation that will no longer do this. And this organization that we have today prioritizes the interest of the big industry and the financial world. And that's also my answer to one of the questions that came up. Why is there this emphasis on math, science, engineering? Because this is a financial need of our world. Huh? And by doing so, it sacrifices the individual potential, because it hampers the development of this inner being. And there is also this exaggerated emphasis on purely intellectual skills, I think. And this is, in my opinion, something toxic, really toxic. In fact, I'm not a psychologist, but I read of modern psychology that is now rediscovering the importance of play. Children should first of all play. No? Yeah. That is what contributes to a healthy growth. Also in developing the intellectual capacities itself later. And we know nowadays that children who are forced too early and too much in doing intellectual exercises tend to develop depression or other symptoms, or even in the worst case scenario, to mental illnesses. Or in any case, there is, especially here in Germany, I see this, there is an increasing unsatisfaction among children, even if they perhaps come from families that have money, they have no material problems, and they also become aggressive. That's another thing. And grades and tests, examinations, certificates have the function to force children to learn precisely those skills necessary to make money in the present financial world. But this suffocates systematically the soul's evolution and needs, which ultimately craves for self-expression, but can't, because it isn't allowed to do so, since it must serve that collective machinery. So to close the circle, free progress education is about freedom of the soul to progress. That's where this expression comes from. No? It's a progress through a soul-centered, soul-growth education, and where the role, by the way, of the teacher is not that to teach at all, but that to help, assist, coach in this process of growth, and to create the conditions, the conditions, also eventually the outer, down-to-earth, infrastructural and administrative conditions, so that this process in the child and in everyone learning, also in the student, in the college student, university student, can take place freely without hindrances to this inner growth, and that we all can express the potentials that we have inside. So this was a bit, I think I can say a lot of other things also, but this was a bit philosophical perhaps introduction. We can eventually also speak how to put these things in practice, but this is a background idea that stands behind this FPE paradigm.
So Marco, I have a few questions.
Yeah.
But before I have the questions, is I really liked how you put forth that the teacher has a soul potential themselves, the role of teacher, let's put it that way. Because I like the way you laid out the possible function of the role of teacher, not in the usual term of authoritarian. I do like that. So my question, though, is, coming through that system that you talk about, that I totally agree the way it's in America, and I'm 65, and having from time to time a few teachers that I feel were coming from within the system, but very in the 60s and stuff, trying to promote what you're saying, you know, and that was probably part of the reason they could then, because there was a movement within the system even to allow it, but then it got cut off. It seems, though, that part of learning entails a certain resistance of, you know, somehow there's a resistance that has to be part of the learning. Mm-hmm. You know, you make space for the potential to come out of the soul. I agree. But there's also an internal resistance within the soul, partially by environmental impact of how we, just in our families, been taught how maybe our families aren't good at, you know, because what you're saying seems to me needs to be applied to parenting itself.
Yeah.
The way we parent. Because parents are technically the first educators. Technically.
Very well said, yes.
And so setting the conditions, like you're saying, of having a possible place where a child and adult could progress, have a learning progression from the place of soul, there seems to be inherent having to work with a certain resistance to even acknowledging this is a good idea.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, I know this very well, because when I used to talk to teach as a teacher in a school, I tried to apply different learning and teaching methods, and I found very well a lot of resistance. First of all, by the children, they were no longer children; they were teenagers and high schooler. But we have also to ask ourselves, where does this come from?
Yes.
Because does a child who has to learn to walk, for example, show a resistance to learn to walk? Does a child that has to learn his mother tongue, native language, has a resistance to learn that language? No. But suddenly, when they arrive at school, learning begins to acquire this negative connotation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There are so many studies nowadays that show that children, the younger the children are, and the more passionate and the more interested and the more curiosity they have, and they learn, they are learning machines. They learn a lot, much more than we as adults. This begins to decrease, and they are also interesting. I can't tell you now, give you the precise sources, but eventually you can Google it and you will find it somewhere. There are also interesting researches that show that most of the children like the idea to go to school, because they have this idea that they will go to school and learn a lot of things. This passion, after the first, second, or third year, fades away. Yeah. So where is the problem? Is it in the children, in the human nature, or is it in the system? And that's, otherwise, if that would not be the problem, is in the system, I would not even be here to speak to you about that, because it means that the system is okay. But I'm precisely here because I think the system is not okay. That's why I continue almost to become a bit annoying, that I continue to say it's a system immanent problem. It's not just a problem in us. So what happens? That children are raised up for a decade to learn in that environment with that style of learning, where they have this passive approach to learning. There's a teacher in front of the blackboard, teaches you, you have to absorb, somehow elaborate it, and then to give an output in form of examinations and so on. And you do this for 10 years, and then suddenly a Marco Masi or a Michael Stumpf comes there and says, no, now we do it completely differently.
Yeah,
it's quite obvious that there is a resistance, and not only is a resistance, there is also an incapacity. I used to give my students also a lot of freedom, and for example, I just make it the typical example that always I make is I used to give them something, projects, some ideas that they can develop, and I made a list of, 10 themes. I made 9 proposals, what they could make a research or something like that. At this 10th place, I wrote, choose whatever you wish, whatever kind of, not whatever, because it was about physics, so it could not be about cooking, but whatever kind of theme you would like to develop and are interested in. And only I have also a statistics about that. Only one about 20 chose the last thing. So I think surely also the teacher may have done something wrong, but I believe the idea is that we children, students, we tend to forget how learning works and tend to accommodate our mental structure to that kind of environment and learning environment. And
100% agree, because I've done some, before I had children, I studied child development and through Joseph Chilton Pierce and his influence. And one of the things that struck me is he, and this is back in the 80s, your point, that children, if you emphasize too much rote learning and don't give them room to play, it creates anxiety.
Yeah.
And especially the first, I'd say the first 10 years, you know, and you know that, and that's what I remember from my own going through the school system is, it wasn't just a school, but I do remember feeling a lot of anxiety about just the competition to get the teacher's attention.
Hmm.
So yes. I agree. Yeah. I agree with you.
If there is a problem to get the teacher attention, however, I tendentially think then that there are problems with the teacher.
Okay.
The teacher should be always attentive to every children, to every student, to everyone, as far as possible. because if you have a class of 30, 40 children, it's impossible to.
It's impossible.
Impossible. But if a student, I would like also to speak about higher school, also in college, university, if a student asks for your attention and the teacher does not allow you to, then it's a problem in the teacher. And I have seen also many instances of this kind of things.
Yeah.
But yes, but okay.
Yeah, well, I'm part of the system. I remember part of when I was going through it, they actually had a better support system in some of the classes I went to, of where parents or even students learning to teach would come out and be aides to help navigate the room for the teacher. You know, I remember in third grade where there was a grandfather type person that came to class, and he came specifically for a period of time to support the teacher to sit next to the student and help them read. That I'll never forget that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that kind of support for the teacher without, I'm not disagreeing with you, but I do think with in America, we don't, it is sometimes the teacher, I'm not going to take that, but like you say, the system put so much on the teacher too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. This system, it's not a coincidence that I think there are also interesting statistics that show that those professional categories who suffer most of burnout are, I think, the first player are the managers, and then those who work in hospitals.
And healthcare professionals.
Healthcare professionals. And then immediately come. Yeah, so eventually I ask you for help. Yeah. and then immediately also the teachers, because they are so overwhelmed, they must do everything. They must be multitasking. And by the way, more than ever in recent times, they get also a lot of bureaucratic work to do. But think, just to make an example, how also another form of teaching, or to be more precise, of learning can be put into practice, is that of flipped classroom environment. I don't know if you are accustomed. Mm. Well, the flipped classroom is flipped because it is not that first there is a teacher that teaches you something and then you have to repeat it. It's the opposite. The situation is flipped. You teach first yourself, that is, you read a book or you see video lectures or whatever, and only later you go to a class where you have not a lecture anymore, but a question and session time, and eventually do exercises with someone who is no longer a lecturer, but a helper. And this could have not only, it has two advantages. First of all, the student does not learn passively, but actively, because it is a sort of self-teaching, first of all. And when you don't understand something and you cannot go forward, you still have the figure of the coach, the helper, call it teacher if you wish, and you're not just stuck there. But first of all, you're forced, yeah, this is a setting where you inevitably self-teach yourself. And secondly, but the second advantage of this form of, and here we come to the point that you made, is that since the teaching is replaced by a question and answer time and exercises, the teacher has no longer to make these lectures to every time to repeat it. Also, the teacher has much more time because this method avoids the necessity to repeat the lecture every time, because eventually you can also tape it, record it, and you make it once. And your function is very different, and you have much more time also for individualized and personalized assistance. But to do that, you need a different practical understanding and practical realization of how teaching and learning is conceived and done. You cannot just throw it in the conventional school setting, something like
that. Yeah, and it is set up to be so mechanical that it nullifies, in my opinion, it nullifies that organic spark that you talk about. Mm. You talked about the spark, but you know, I'm just going to say, fortunately, because I was born in the '60s, after I left school and did some things, that spark came back to life. Mm. So learning to love to learn is something I worked really hard at sharing with my children.
Yeah, exactly. The learning to learn is one of the central themes that we have to rediscover. Because if we are not able to do that, we'll also not be able to solve the problems of our modern society. Because after all, when you work, when you go look for a job, when you do a job, it is always in one form or another, you have to be able to learn something and to do it. And with most of the cases, there is no one who says tells you to make it so. You have to do it by your own.
Yeah, very true.
So it's the opposite of what modern school is doing. Yeah.
Is my microphone working a little bit better at this point?
It's still crackly. It's still a little bit crackly. It's showing red on your thing instead of white. I don't know if that makes a difference.
I think that means I'm recording, but yeah, oh. I'm speaking loudly, so, and right next to the microphone, so maybe I'll have to switch up here. But yeah, the flipped classroom is one aspect. and you in the book, and you also provided a paper that wasn't linked to this call that explained maybe the 9-10 other options for the various types of learning. So perhaps before we open it up to further discussion, did you want to go into that a little bit more, Marco?
Well, yeah, as you said, there are many different ways I don't think that in this sense I'm telling something new, but perhaps the attempt that I tried to make is to synthesize it, these different ways of approaches of learning and teaching into a common frame. Maybe we can make another example that I like very much is that learning by teaching. Yeah. Because I think finally, especially when you teach, you realize that the best way to learn something is to teach it.
Mm-hmm.
because that's at least, I think this is, every teacher can tell that sooner or later. And it is a method practically where the student takes up the role of the teacher or of the professor, and it stands in front of the class and explains things also to the other students. Of course, there is still the role of the true teacher, professor, mentor, or whatever we would like to, who sits in the last row in the class and keeps the situation under control. Because if you talk complete rubbish, he or she will intervene. But if this, I think, is practiced and exercised from the youngest age, I don't know from what age, about this we can discuss eventually, but from as soon as possible, this learning by teaching, then I think also students would become much more able not only to learn actively, but also they learn to explain, which is something that is also lacking. I saw a lot of students who were quite good, had also good grades, but when they had to explain something, they were a complete disaster. And that's also some of the many skills that are important also in a modern environment where everything goes with PowerPoint and slides and the explainer. And this is something that is impossible to learn this with standardized tests. Because with the, you have to learn also to formulate and shape your thoughts so that you can bring it to others. So this learning by teaching is another approach. Another could be possibly that what I like a lot is that of the inquiry-based learning. The inquiry-based learning is something where it is a process of exploration and discovery, where the student does not receive neither a book where to learn nor the answers. It inquires some questions, researches, investigates, and tries to find out for an answer to a question that eventually nobody asked before, or even nobody didn't find an answer for. I loved to do this as a child. I wanted to know how many trees there are in the world, for example. nowadays you could do it, I think, I didn't find the answer, but nowadays I think you can Google something like that. So also this, and this is this inquiry-based way of making research from the young age on gives you, creates a context where this inner curiosity and eventually can also come to the front. And these kind of things, research, inquiring, asking questions, and finding by yourself the answer without having someone who tells you what the truth is. That is what develops also critical thinking. So this is another, and finally, I would perhaps also mention the fact that instead of making exams with grades and certificates where you have just a certificate with a number, it would, I think, be much more interesting also to allow students, children, to compile, so to speak, a competence portfolio where they create something, or they have what they have learned, that there is learning progression, they keep a sort of diary of what they have done, how they proceeded in this work, and what they have produced. If they are artists, they will have something in their portfolio that shows what they have produced. If they are more the intellectual type, they may write some article, eventually publish it also very early in a peer-reviewed journal, or write a book, or create something. And in this competence portfolio that could replace certificates and grades and exams, you can bring this also to someone who hires you, and instead of the certificate, he sees what you have done, what your skills are, what you have already produced. And I think in most cases, this is more convincing for managers who have to hire someone for a job, more convincing than just a piece of paper, which tells after all, where there's only eventually only a number, or that you have done such examinations and had got just that certificate. I made single examples now, but try to see this in a larger vision and put it into context in a synergy. And you see how a system, also from a very practical point of view, grows, emerges from it, that can also very practically replace the conventional school system. And I think could be do this also much better. So these were just like some examples.
Great. Thank you, Marco. Is the audio better now at this point?
Yes, I think it's a little bit. Yeah, sounds so. Yeah.
All right. But I'll open it up to Ed, Mark, if you guys have any comments to make. Any thoughts?
I do. Just in general, again, I can't speak to what goes on in Europe. But here in, I think our system works well for what it is intended, in that curiosity and intellectual acuity is innate. And it varies from person to person. And exceptional people in this country find a way to realize their passion. Mm-hmm. In other words, you know, some of the most famous, wealthiest people never even graduated college, but they were brilliant, like Bill Gates, Larry Ellison, Zuckerberg, in that they find a way because they're so brilliant. And there are many different ways. There's homeschooling now, there's charter schools, there's private schools. So there's all different kinds besides the public education system, but brilliant people usually find their way. I think the problem is with most of the people, and I'm going to generalize, but most of the people will fall within one standard deviation of average. You know, they're not brilliant, they're not dumb, they're, you know, mm-hmm. about 70% of the people will fall into that category. And those people used to do okay because some of them wouldn't even go to school. And that was fine. There was something for them to do. But the big system has gotten so complicated and diverse that it can't meet the needs of all people. And then there's maybe 15-20% of the people who really struggle intellectually, whatever, but they're still pushed into the system and they wind up doing very poorly and disrupting the class, the system, whatever, the classroom. And there's also the personality structure of the individuals, the introvert versus the extrovert, the open system of education and what you're talking about really introverted people often have trouble in a classroom situation where the extrovert is getting all the attention. And there's what you got your one teacher and you got your, you know, 30 kids, and you just can't do that personalized instruction, which might pull the creativity, curiosity out of some of these kids. Now, if the parents, and Michael was right on spot on this, yeah, from the moment you're born, you start to get in it. Well, I don't know, 6 months or something. You start to get an education from the context of your home life, and so by the time kids, lesser kids, not brilliant kids, I think brilliant people will always find a way, but the other people is where it gets very difficult. And it's just my whole family, we have teaching, all of us. My son was a special needs teacher and he quit, burned out, if you will. The system just killed him. He was, and he'd just watched the general instructors, they'd just almost melt down in the classroom. And he had, the teachers were just overwhelmed and he was overwhelmed. There was nothing, he was teaching in LA. And it was just, it's a system problem. It's a family problem. It's a personality problem. It's all those things. And I'm interested if you think you know, I don't I don't see any way out of it. My son thought that every student needs a personal instructor, like a personal trainer, you know, and that's simply not possible. If the parents drop the ball, the teachers can't pick it up. It's just impossible.
Yes.
Every now and again, a brilliant individual will find his way. But other than that, I don't know what to do or have any ideas.
I tried to explain what to do.
I know.
Come again to the same point that I said previously. There is no way out if you don't change the system. In this conventional setting, there is no hope. Nowadays, we have, see also the history of the schools and of the education of the last, 2 centuries now that exist schools generally? 2.5, I think. There have been an enormous number of so-called reforms. The schools have been formed and reformed, and now in Germany we have the Digitalisierung, that it's all about conceiving of new ways of education based on digitization, computers, IT technologies, and so. Yes, I'm not against it. It's fine. Huh? I agree that children have to learn also to tackle with the new media, but that these kinds of reforms will not change much if you don't change also the system, how it works. And if we don't, will not, then there is no hope. I'm sorry if I sound very negative and pessimistic from this point of view. My message is, on the contrary, I think should give hope, because it tells, okay, you can't do it in that context, in that conventional system. But if you go out and create something new, on new principles, you cannot make something that is better, but it gets much, much further than that. And not all, but many problems that we have nowadays in the modern school context don't come up in the first place. For example, this idea of when you have a context where from the youngest age we are accustomed to teach us and by us ourselves to learn the learning, the problem of the teacher that has no time to devote to the single individual does not rise in the first place. This doesn't mean that children will learn everything by themselves and the teacher is useless. No, but there's a lot of more opportunities come up. When you allow freedom, also much more frustration, much less frustration will arise. This doesn't mean that every problem of the world, I'm not the kind of guy who believes that education is the culprit of every problem of the world. No. There are also other factors in our modern society that need to be fixed. But the education is one of the central key factors that if we will not change that, as the system works, abolishing grades, exams, abolishing curricula, especially curricula, this teacher-centered teaching and learning. We have to abolish these things and replace it by something else. If we do not do this and would like to keep everything as it is, but transform everything. It won't work. It didn't work for 200 years, and it will not work also for the next 200 years, because it's a system immanent problem. It's not because the people are good or bad. Now they speak a lot about new forms of how does the kind of schools that teachers have been should make, the kind of education that teachers themselves should receive to become better teachers. The problem you mentioned that about the meltdown, yeah. I lived myself. I think I suffer also of burnout symptoms, not only because of that, but also because of this kind of setting I had to work and to live in, this is not because people are not willing enough. It's because the system as it is must be changed. Let's make a prosaic parallel. You can't think to solve the problem of ecology, of the environment, and stick to old energy production system based on coal and that pollute the environment. You cannot keep the two things together. Or you go on and distract yourself, or you accept that we have to change our mindset and also our system, then things can change. But to keep the two things together won't work never. That's at least my personal opinion.
That's a riff off of Einstein. You can't solve the problem from the consciousness that created the problem.
Yeah.
You have to, and I don't have an answer other than that internal spark that breeds curiosity and interest that takes you outside of the consciousness of the problem. You know, kind of you're unstuck from it so that you can work with it differently. You know, I only know that I'm going to just make a radical generalization, but and I know it's not going to happen, but I don't think anybody should have a child unless they have child development courses to know how the brain of a child works. You know, that's just how radical I am, because, you know, as much as I feel I did a good enough job, I wish I would have had some earlier understanding, but I'm okay with what I did and how I learned, because it did help me at the age of 30 to, you know, because I read people like you, Marco, that were trying to help me understand how a child brain works so that I could not continue my own family's, love them, way of parenting and teaching and that. And I don't think there's, I think for me at this point, I think small. I just try to do it on the lowest level I can. I know it's a big problem, but every chance I get a chance to talk about education and talk about parenting along these lines, even as we're doing now, I'm trying to bring that kind of conversation to people. I have a friend of mine in the coffee shop that he had his two daughters in regular school, went to charter school. Now they're homeschooling, and he has similar, you know, he's just looking at what wasn't taking place that they want to see happen. So I think the system, it kind of goes along with, what Terry Patton, you have to sometimes work in the system, outside the system, and around it. And these kind of conversations really help me to dialogue better with people when I talk to them about it. Especially that one thing that you talked about, because it's really interesting, that one thing that you said about children need to learn how to explain, you know, to organize their thoughts and stuff. And sometimes you know, what I run into is I'm trying to do that and people just don't want to engage with that. Oh, stop explaining things. They want to shut you down. You know, and I think that's a direct result from the way they were educated.
I'm sorry, Michael. You sure you're not mansplaining, man?
I'm Mike-splaining, not man. Mike.
And maybe for some people, that's the same thing.
Yes, for some people. And I'm glad I seen your smile.
Well, I think that's a big problem. A lot of people, they see the world a certain way and they'll talk their game. And other people, they don't want it. Who cares? Who cares what you think?
Yeah.
But that's a problem of there's so much stimulus out there.
No, I think that's a good point.
And I think that it transfers to the classroom. It can be so boring for kids today. I mean, when we were in school, there was the teacher and there was the girl with the pigtails and that was about it. Now everybody has the world at their fingertips in their pocket with a phone. And so how do you keep their interest? Unless they're innately curious and then they'll find a way to satisfy that curiosity. Most, not all. Some people are born into such a terrible situation, you know, family, neighborhood, poverty, these things, that, how do you fix that?
I agree with you. When I encounter it, though, I don't try to fix it when I encounter somebody like that, but I bring forth, hopefully model a way that to them, the way I engage with them, that they, it may light them up. I don't know. I practice not, I practice not getting caught up in their history that you so well say, getting caught up in that history, because at this point I can see that history. It's all over their bodies. It's all over them. And well, I just want to add more to it.
That's fine for that. We go back to Wilbur for that, you interacting with an external environment. But I think education is, from a social perspective, from a society perspective, and society isn't, it's just like the problem that I pointed out in Yellowstone Park about populations. Populations are about, and societies are about the progression of the large population. They don't care about the individual. And Marco's talking about an individual soul, a personality, a person, an individual. Well, society in its educational system, that's not what they're there for. They're there to keep the society going, which is an economic endeavor. And the soul was dedicated to the church or the family, and the educational system is about keeping the system going, the population as a whole.
Okay, Mark, and I see your point. I just don't agree with buying into those distinctions anymore. No more. The soul and society are interconnected.
I don't argue with that.
But the thing is, the way you're structuring your argument it's just different than me in the sense that it's emphasizing what it feels like to me, a separation that is just, we bought into. We bought it into by the way you're framing to it, and I see the frame, but I don't buy that frame anymore. I see that it's still, the frame is still being bought and it's still being lived, but I don't buy into it. And I think there's a lot of people, because of the frustration and the way education has made that separation and put competition between the family and the church, and defined that education is about making money and solving the marketplace thing. No, that's got to change. And we have to question the distinctions, like you laid out perfectly well, question that frame. That frame is starting to fall apart. And so we need to bring in and bring in individuals recognizing they're part of this society. They're part of the group. This overemphasis on being a victim of a group, and how the one and the many can learn to work together, but it's a new skill set that we're learning. They don't have to be at odds anymore, like the old way of thinking. And I'm drawing on science, trying to show that science and biology, good science is trying to say, if we don't get our act together and actually inject some soul and some values in the way we're using science, yes, we're going to lead to a conclusion that a large percentage of our species is going to be dead. I agree with that part. Because that you're emphasizing an external and internal, when that's just okay, but that's not solid. They interact.
Of course. That's, of course.
But there's new ways to work with that.
Have at it.
But I think it's only a matter of time where this has to change, in the sense that nowadays we can still make this distinction. Education is for making a living, a job, etc. And our inner world is something else, and we devote it to the church, to religion, to someone else. But I think if we continue on this way, the system will crumble, and then we will have a desert in front of us, and then we will have to realize that things have to change. It's just a sort of Darwinian evolution selection. Sooner or later, the point in question is not if, but how do we want to make this change? By structuring not only education, also other things, but since we are discussing now education, restructuring, reconceiving, and redoing, especially in practice, a new form of education? Or would we like to let it to the fate, to nature? It will work also in that way, but it would be much more brutal, because, you know, nature can be quite brutal sometimes. We have seen this 65 million years ago with the dinosaurs. Suddenly there came down a meteorite, and that was a solution of nature. Would we like to go this way, or will we accept to rethink about things, to change our mindset, and to question critically if our education system, the system, not the what children have to learn or not to learn, is if they have to learn this instead of that. That's a superficial discussion. It's about how children should learn, In what way, in what context? And if that what they have, if you want to continue the system of compulsion, which is also a hierarchical system, or if we want to open this educational system to a more free understanding of education and not hierarchical, or at least less hierarchical. And if we will not allow that, I think in the next decades, for the next generations, we will see quite bad things happening. If we open ourselves, quite the contrary can happen. It can be really something really wonderful that we have. So it's not a message of pessimism, it's an optimism. But we have to understand that this system as it is can no longer work. And this division, education in a context, for example, you made also the context, I don't have children, so I usually don't come to this point, but I think it's very true. Education is also something that happens in the family. And also these principles of the freedom of the soul are also very important in a family context. Maybe they are not always so easy to put into practice, especially with some children. I know this indirectly from my nephew, and also indirectly from the students with whom I interacted in schools, because effectively you see that there are also major problems in the family. You cannot explain everything, oh, it's bad school system, bad teachers. And there are a lot of problems in the family. So this is, but again, I think also in that context, the freedom of the soul will become a more and more pressing issue, especially for the next generations, because maybe we still, I for 40 years, I obeyed like a little soldier and adapted to the system. Yeah. Only in the last 10 years, I began to develop these ideas. I'm still working on that. And every day I see how deeply engraved these ideas of education are in our head, in our brain. It's difficult to come out of it. But it's also interesting. It is an adventure for itself also.
I think that's a good attitude, at least I try to bring it. It's an adventure. That kind of maybe counterbalances the pessimism, because Mark's right, we're overstimulated as far as even to consider these ideas, I think. I think that's a good point. But having an attitude of adventure or inquiry, open inquiry, kind of just counterbalances the overwhelm. And don't get me wrong, from time to time throughout my weekly life, I have periods where I feel overwhelmed, and not just from the technology. I get overwhelmed because I have children, I have friends, I have multiple network of people that are in different situations of suffering, just natural suffering. I have one person close to me that's dying. So I get overwhelmed with just realizing, and it's a soul thing to me, Marco. Because the soul is open to suffering and wanting, I think there's a yearning to at least inquire how can one help without trying to come from a industrial point of view of trying to fix it, you know, just to be helpful. And not because there's some things I can't fix. My children are growing up, they're adults, I raised them. And I'm concerned with them, but I got to stay out of their business too. So soul runs through it. I like it. The soul runs in the family and runs all through, as far as I'm concerned. So you got me what with the word soul.
Plenty of thought. The discussion's about schools. It's not about education, it's about schools. In my lifetime, if I think back to my grade school years in the 50s, I'm not one of these people who glorifies the 50s. I think they sucked, but there was a general, and I'm coming to a point that Mark made, because I think it is an important one. It's the societal one. Good or bad or indifferent, in the 1950s in the United States, and I would be willing to wager from what I've heard from my wife in Germany as well, just to give the two places that I'm kind of related to in some way, there was such a thing as a society. And education at that point, there was a difference between upbringing and education. Upbringing happened in the home and education happened in the school system. And education, the one of the reasons that was always given, if you ask me, well, why do you go to school? Because it was said, and this was the societal statement, an educated populace is essential for the proper functioning of a democratic society. Well, you don't hear anything like that anymore, because we don't have societies anymore. Margaret Thatcher stated dogmatically in 1989, there is no such thing. It's an illusion. It's a fiction. There's just a lot of individuals running around seeking their own individual interests. There is no such thing as society.
And we have community.
Well, we don't have that anymore.
Well,
I
think that's an appropriation of a word. They use the Black community. And that's
I understand that, but just let me continue. We traded in our society for an economy. There wasn't the economic drive that you speak of so often, Mark, is a new phenomenon. Yes, people wanted to live relatively well, and there was such a thing as a middle class, and on your bell curve of people were one standard deviation on every side, and the 74% of the families fell within that. And they were able to provide, and that's that spectrum. There's always outliers and the creatives and the whoever they are who I've always believed people learned in spite of school, not because of it. It taught you how hurdles get set up that you need to jump over. And you can take that principle all through your life, wherever you go. The hurdles may look a little different, but there's always just going to be hurdles you have to jump over if you're going to get anywhere. So that's what schooling did for me. But that's just a personal thing. So, but my point is, there was one time we thought education was a common good. Well, we don't think that anymore. We think it is within the domain of the individual to achieve something in order to. It's become very, very purposeful, very goal-oriented. It's reduced in the end to get the right piece of paper, get the right job. That's what comes out. But we've also talked in other contexts, there was a time when people sought employment because they were going to be productive members of society in a more generalized way. Today, nobody seeks employment. They just look for jobs. They're not even offered employment anymore. They're just offered jobs. We've changed that whole vocabulary. We've fractionalized, fragmented, beaten everything down to the individual. This is one of the problems I have with the individual. I understand that we're all different, but we all have to share something in common, or we don't have a society. We don't have the commonness is what holds us together. And that commonness is what I see going away. And that's what I see that it's been driven out. And it's because it's bigger than the school system itself. The school is just one manifestation within that tries to somehow fulfill some duty. And it's been given a duty that it can't fulfill. If, in fact, families are destroyed by the economy, the fastest growing family form in the world are single parent families. And if you're in an economic situation where you have to work two jobs to support and feed that kid, well, I'm sorry, upbringing doesn't happen a lot. Where's it going to happen? Who's going to do it? And that got, and this is a critique that I have, that got offloaded on the school. Well, there was the time when it happened in the family that was upbringing, and education happened in the school. Well, we don't do either anymore. We don't educate. We only school. And this goes all the way to the top. I was just reading, I just finished reading Kripal's book, The Flip. And he talks about all of these doctors and neurosurgeons and technologists and whatnot. And I bet you can count on one hand the number of times he even refers to them as educated. They're all trained. They're not educated. They're trained. You train someone to do something specific, not to think through a problem, not to come up with a creative solution. You can't train people to do that. You can give them a hint. You can give them a nudge. You can say, well, you know, what's on the other side of it? Whatever. But training and education are also two pairs of shoes. And we've reduced almost everything we've done or are doing to train. So it seems to me that the problem, the issue, I don't want to get too curmudgeon-y, okay? The issue is bigger. It's bigger than the school. The school is just the manifestation of what we've come up with. And the things that you're pointing out, Marco, are absolutely spot on. What I find so fascinating just about the school side of it, every one of these reforms, even the modern ones, what was the biggest push for charter schools other than spend your education dollars as you see fit, which was bullshit anyhow, but beside that, what did they market themselves with? Smaller classes. Mm-hmm. What do private schools market themselves with?
Smaller
student-teacher ratio. It's always reducing the number of educators, coaches, mentors, I don't care what you call them, and people who are on the learning side of the spectrum and the other people that are trying to make sure it happens in some way, shape, or form. And that gets reduced. And what have they done throughout the Western world in our, we no longer have a society, we only have economies. Well, that costs too much money. So we can't afford to do that. Now, we have money more than enough for guns, bullets, and bombs. But we don't have a cent when it comes to education. And even in the last budget that came out here in Germany, where Bildung, education, plays, it's always written with a capital B. This is always the big issue. They upped the defense budget because Mr. Trump says we're not paying our fair share. We almost now have a larger military budget than Russia, who is the threat to the entire world. We don't even have tanks that work, but they reduced the money that was to be spent on education to compensate for it. That's where they always take it. So in the end, to take the economic argument, you get what you pay for. And we're not paying for shit, and so we got shit. And so we need to be thinking really hard about what are we going to do. Now, one option that most Americans have that we don't have here in Hessen is homeschooling. It's not even an option. It's not on the table. If I don't send my child to an institution of some kind, they don't get any education at all because I'm not allowed to, well, I know, and you know, and we all know, the education they're going to get is going to be for me. And the schooling they get is going to be wherever they go. Because that's the only way I did it with my own.
Is there a course called chromogeny?
Nope. No, it's one of those things, Mark. You kind of have to be born into it. No, I've cultivated this for a long time because and I'll tell you what serves it. Marco talks about being, you know, like the burnout. You get in the system and you just realize it doesn't work. Fun fact, by the way, Marco, 75% of all psychosomatic beds in hospitals in Germany, those are people who are suffering from psychosomatic illnesses that are slaves to that. 75% of them in Germany are being occupied by teachers. 75%. So, right, because it is grueling and you get in the system. Marco was there. I was also in an alternative school. You can't ever go back to a real school. You'll go insane. And we kind of managed somehow to do a little, and a lot of the things that he's talking about, project things, flipped classrooms, inquiry land, we were doing all kinds of that stuff. We did more teaching outside of the classroom than in it because of the way we were organized. But that's because we were a small little enclosed society, if you will, subset community, if you will, in a castle on a hill. Okay. And we just didn't have rich kids. That was the nice thing about where we were, because generally speaking, they're elite schools. They're the private schools and prep schools, you know, like on the East Coast or whatnot, because tuition was high, but we had 30% of our students were being funded by the youth authority, the Jugendamt. So they were sending these, because this was their last, we were the last open institution for most of them. If they didn't make it here, chances are good they would have what the Germans call Swedish curtains, bars, where they were going to go next. It would have been a closed reform school or something. So we were like the last chance. So we had really rich kids and people, this is your last chance before jail, which made for a very interesting community. But you can do all kinds of different things in that context than you can do elsewhere. So it opens up what I would call educational opportunities for the people that are involved, both the students and the so-called teachers. But that's such an exception. It's not anything even close to the rule. But that's basically, because this fits in with what Marco was saying, kind of how schools really have to look in the end, but they can only look that way if they're supported by a society that believes that education is education, not just training, and that upbringing, unfortunately, in our current economic situation, where we have this growing number of single parent families and whatnot. They are economically disadvantaged. Most of the people that came from the youth authority were single parent, children of offspring. Single parents, that's why. Yeah, offspring of single parents, because they weren't managing on their own. And this was, obviously, we're trying the last ditch effort, say, and some of them were there for the first time. They were going to go through two or three of these schools before they ended up in jail or not, or, you know, because sometimes you catch them, sometimes you don't. It's like anything else, because there are these individual differences. There was no one way to deal with all of your students. You had to take them on an individual basis, but you can only take students on an individual basis if you have a limited number of students to deal with. When we were full up, we had about 110 students and 10 staff. So the ratio was about 10 to 1. Well, that gives you a lot more opportunity to interact in a much different way than if you're sitting in a classroom with 40 kids sitting there, most of whom who don't want to be there because they're not getting anything out of it. They're being whatever, because that portion of the system is not structured to unfold or develop any of their innate potentialities. It's to either you get it or get out of here and get your piece of paper and get your job and be, you know, get out of my hair. And I'm not faulting teachers who have that kind of attitude in them. What are they supposed to do? So the problem is a little bigger. We got to look at this at a higher level and actually ask ourselves, okay, well, are we a society and do we value education? And is this something that we care about, or is it just another economic good? Because that's what is, to me, that's how I see it's been boiled down. And we've decided as an economy, it's not. Individuals can fend for themselves in the end. So that's just my curmudgeon-y comment. So.
Well done. Well done.
Yes, I agree completely. In fact, one thing that I would like that should not be misunderstood of this type of idea that I tried to put forward, because you made the distinction. No, you did not make the distinction between the individual and society. You say we should not talk only about the rights of the freedoms, the soul, and the rights of the individual, because after all, in your times, education was seen as something necessary for a proper functioning of the society itself, as a common good. I wrote this down because I like this. And I completely agree. The point I would like to make is that there is no contradiction, at least when I speak, okay, I have obviously overemphasized perhaps this aspect because of a lack of time, but also in this free progress education idea, there is also this idea how to create a community, a learning community of people with also project-oriented learning with groups. And we are in a time where we speak continuously about this skills that young people should learn to learn to work in a group environment, which after all finally means again work in the financial system where there's this group work. And I contemplate also this aspect, but I say pay attention, the best way to create groups, environments, and society, functioning societies, it is not to put together the individuals in a compulsory manner and press them in a pot. The best way is to find the balance between the individual needs and the needs of the collective. And after all, there is not really a contradiction. Because when there is a synergy and a harmony between the individuals, plural, there will be also a functioning society. And our society, if we would like to say that it is less and less functioning, not the only reason, but one of the reasons is precisely because we insist on this educational system that wants to create unity in uniformity. But a unity as a society does not work in uniformity well. It works in diversity. We have to create unity in diversity. But this diversity is a soul factor. It is not something that can be imposed because I say, you make this, you make that. And if we are able to create a synergy in an educational system and where children and students and teenagers learn to interact with each other, but preserving their soul factor, so to speak, that will be the best function in society. Not an idea which sees only the collective or an egoistic idea that sees only the individual. And a free progress education paradigm is based precisely on that. tries to perfect the individual so that it is able to serve better the society. So I would wanted only to make this point, because perhaps from the preceding introduction, it might have sounded just an egoistic way of learning, and I learn, I do what I want and the others don't exist. No, it's not like that.
I just to clarify, I did not understand that you had said it that way. I understand you pointed it out. I have absolutely no problem with emphasizing the individual.
Yeah,
I do have a problem with emphasizing egos and emphasizing, you know, it's just me first and whatnot, because that is nothing. It isn't anything that brings us together. What I appreciate most about what you're doing is you're bringing this issue on. You're putting this issue on the table again, and just as our little round here showed, it doesn't take very long until we really get to what I believe is this core, that there's a fundamental mindset that's involved in how we as a group, because that's who's going to decide in the end. One person can't do that. So the group has to somehow decide. We want that. The thing that always comes out, and this is what really amazed me about my time in the private school that I was at, once you get a small group of people together, you just have a small classroom. I had one combined fifth and sixth grade. We had grades because we were accredited, Shotley Shanakan. But we had so few children in that age group that we just put them together into one class, even though they were in two grades. And there were only six of them. Mm-hmm. And when you're just dealing with six individuals in a classroom, everything happens differently. You automatically stop lecturing, because it is like sitting around the dinner table if you were at at lunch or at whatnot, like sitting around a table with the family. It takes on a whole different dynamic, and the whole learning process starts reshaping itself. I personally believe that one of the reasons that we've come to this top-down, hierarchical, autocratic, totalitarian system is that we've shoved so many people into a classroom that you can't manage it otherwise. You can't help but, regardless of how you personally feel about the job that you're doing, you are forced to deal with 40 faces. Mm-hmm. And you have to somehow make sure that the bell rings and there are no injuries. That's, you know, what it ends up or boils down to in the end. And we just kept pushing more and more. It's the same problem that we have in the healthcare profession. My daughter she's going to have twins soon. She went to the hospital and they said, well, we don't know if we can accommodate you. And I'm going, well, what does that mean? We have a person that's about to give birth to twins. Well, you know, if we could do this in a cesarean, but we have to plan that. And you know, and if something untoward comes up, I don't think that, you know, what kind of help is that? Now, you know, how can a hospital even come up with this idea? Her first complaint from the doctor she's talking to, we're understaffed. Oh, gee, imagine that. You privatized all the clinics and now they're all understaffed because now they all have to make money. They used to heal people. Now they make money. They're not in the health service industry. They're in the profit generating industry. Well, it just so happens that the quote unquote county hospital in the county that she lives in says, no problem, show up. We're ready for that. We do that about practically every day if something untoward comes. Something always untoward comes. They're pregnancies, for crying out loud. Okay. So that one hasn't been privatized yet, and they're still functioning like what I would expect a hospital to function like. Well, it says something about how we've decided to slice our reality pie. A lot. And so getting these things on the table is, and this just to repeat, you even bringing this up and getting it on the table gets people thinking, well, it's not exactly how I imagine. I've heard all of these stories and I have my own experiences and they all don't match. And if we start looking at it even a little deeper than the surface, these to me, huge paradoxes start manifesting right in front of your eyes. And so we really need to start thinking hard about this kind of thing. So we're on the same wavelength, even though we don't always completely articulate all of the aspects of what we're thinking at the time when we say it. So.
By the way, this problem of the understaff is a chronic problem. I don't know in the US and other countries, but here in Germany, it's a chronic problem also for teachers. They don't find any more teachers. Well, the official justification is because there was a baby boom, and whereas the teachers, they are going to pensions. So there's a disbalance of this. Well, this is one side of the truth. I think the other side of the truth that people don't want to say honestly, and maybe they don't admit themselves honestly, that there is also another side of the truth, and namely that there is less and less people who want to become teachers, and those who became teachers are stressed out and are quitting. So, but from this point of view, there's still a resistance to accept perhaps this truth, this reality. And I suspect, unfortunately, that it will become worse and worse. And there is a chronic deficiency in the number of teachers. And obviously, who is suffering from this? Also the children, because the classrooms are becoming a mess. Especially now that there is also the migration problem, etc. And all these mental illnesses are also surfacing. There are, I didn't see this personally, but there are reports of children who have burnout symptoms already in primary school. But the resistance to keep everything as it is, we desire to change everything, but don't want to change nothing, nevertheless. So I don't know. Let's see how this will turn out. But I have a proposal here, and I put it there. And who wants to catch it and try it out can call me. And ask me.
It's a great proposal, and I'm glad that we had this this time with you, Marco, because it's very passionate on me, because I Ed and I have talked about this. I have a lifetime love of learning, and it's saved my ass many times.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah, thank you all as well. It was a very stimulating discussion. Yes,
I think if I can attempt to wrap it up a little bit, I think we all agree, and I think the research bears it out, that the most effective intervention is smaller class size. You know, ideally, you know, one teacher, four kids, something like that. And that's impossible. And part of that is economics, in that teachers aren't paid a lot of money. It used to be things changed. I don't know about Germany, but here in the States, the schools were funded with property taxes. In other words, the homeowners and the businesses were taxed. Like I used to be a homeowner, and I think 3/4 of the property tax, what were assessed, went to the education system, to the school system in your district, in your county. And so the homeowners bore the economic burden of educating everyone. But that was set up. Our whole society was set up here on individuality, land ownership, and these were and those people were taxed, and they were and those taxes went to educate everyone because they felt, I think someone said early on, that the decision was made that an educated populace is good for the whole society to have up, you know, not college, but basic reading and writing and some history and the people who funded it were the homeowners, the property owners, and the property taxes. As the population increases and there's more and more people, there's not more and more property. That's a finite thing. So the taxes keep going up and up and up. The property tax, and the
unless you live in California. Proposition 13 eliminated raising property taxes until the property changed hands. So they completely defunded their entire schools. And the reason that California
their school system is a mess.
Of course. Because they just cut it off at the knees, and the only people that can do it, when you move into the new house, you end up, because you had a $600,000 home that was formerly a $40,000 home, you end up paying a whole lot more property taxes, and then they complain, well, why am I being taxed so high? But if you are contributing to the common good, then taxes are not an issue. Everyone who believes that they're getting something for their taxes complains less about those taxes. But when you know, you realize you're getting nothing for it, then you have every right to complain. That is the problem. What I do like is, it used to be when you went to the movies, it said you paid 25 cents to get in. This was 1957, 58. 25 cents to get in and watch the matinee. And 10 cents of that 15 cents went to education. It was listed right there on the little sign that when you were paid. So part of that entertainment tax was also funding education. It was a small portion.
Well, they do here in Colorado. We have community colleges, and we also have gambling, the gambling, a percentage of that goes to fund the community colleges. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Colorado is a pretty progressive state.
Well, at least they know how to turn vices. They can ease their conscience.
And we got free weed. We got gambling, sex, drugs. Yeah,
that's right. It's all sex, there. Drugs, rock and roll. And why isn't this a good place to live?
Yeah, and they keep coming, and they keep coming.
Yeah, well, there's something to say. Yeah.
Build a goddamn wall.
Yeah, yeah. Around Colorado, it'd be cheaper. It's square, so it'd be easier.
Well, thank you all for the conversation. I don't necessarily have a closing comment. There's lots of thoughts running through my head. As a parent, I like the comment about parenting at near the beginning, and equating either teaching or teachers or the education we've received as a parenting technique. I don't want to continue on with it. I could go on for 20 minutes about some of my own proposals, but it's ideas that we tossed around here that will stick in my noggin, will stick with me as I proceed in my day. So I appreciate this conversation. Any other comments?
Well, I just wanted to thank Marco again for bringing it up and kind of like providing the spark to get, you know, have the talk this evening as well.
Yes, Marco, you should probably plug your book, and where can we get it? Is he there?
Yeah, he didn't know he's muted.
Is there not a link on the page?
Yeah, I can make another link, but if you click on the actual image of the ebook,
book.
Yeah. It does not. It is only. I can send you. You find it on Amazon.
Oh,
okay. Yes, yeah, if you wish, it's.
Is it translated, or did you write it in English, or?
No, I wrote it in English, but it has been proofread 2 times, so it should be almost understandable. So, nowadays I write it in English also to exercise myself because I want to learn and teach. It's a way. By the way, I didn't learn English in school, almost nothing. I learned it because I was curious to read Scientific American, who was not translated in Italian when I was in Italy, and I could not wait for the translation. I was too excited and wanted to read it. And there I learned it approximately English.
Well, you do. Yeah, I had no trouble understanding it. So, good job.
No, just an example how to show that you learn better things when you do it because you are interested in doing
sure.
it. Huh?
Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. Interest and education go together.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much for this very stimulating conversation. Yeah. And
yes, thank you. Thank you. A lot of fun again. Yeah.
Thank you.
Bye bye, everybody.
Bye bye.
Bye. I'm sure it won't be the last educational conversation. So,
I'm sure it won't be. Yeah. You guys take care.
You bye, too, everyone. Ed. Bye.